In the small town, there were two brothers who, over the course of many years, cheated, swindled, robbed, and generally stole from everyone that they ever did a business with. So the entire town and surrounding community reviled and despised these two brothers rightfully, as everyone was aware of just how disreputable and dishonest they were. So one day, one of the brothers mysteriously died. Although they had never attended synagogue, changing the words a little bit here, but although they never attended synagogue, the one remaining brother went to the local rabbi and offered vast sums of money if he would only come to the funeral and say the appropriate words, and a large bonus, but only if he would, during the course of the eulogy, refer to his brother as a tzaddik. Okay? So the rabbi was troubled by the request. It was a little bit of a bribe, if anything, but it was a poor synagogue, and the rabbi, the shul, desperately needed repairs. So the congregants heard about the rabbi's dilemma and were curious as to what he would do. Fine. So everyone comes to the funeral. The funeral begins, and the synagogue was packed. And the rabbi started with the usual Tehillim, all the rites and traditions as required by halacha. In closing, after referring to the man in the box, he paused and turned to face the remaining brother, the brother who's still alive. And he begins, "As you all know, the departed was an awful individual who robbed, cheated, and swindled, and stole from everyone he did business with. However, compared to his brother, he was a tzaddik." So, as the topic tonight is about delivering a proper eulogy, so obviously there are elements here that would not entirely be proper, but a little bit of a humorous joke. But if we think about where does the idea of Hesped coming from, and why am I calling it Mitzvah of the Week? So it has its roots in the Torah, not one of the 613 mitzvahs, but it has its roots in the Torah, where make this a little bigger. So the second pasuk in the parsha was first tells us Vayu Chayei Sarah, right? Tells us how long Sarah lived, and then V'tamod Sarah B'Kiryat Arba Hi Chevron Be'eretz Kanaan. So Sarah died in Kiryat Arba, which is nowadays Chevron. V'Yavo Avraham, and Avraham came, L'Spod L'Sarah V'Liv Kota, in order to eulogize Sarah and to bewail her, to cry over her. Mefarshim pick up that this is a little bit of an unusual order, because normally, what it would seem to be, is that normally you find out, God forbid, that someone who you're close with passed away. So your first reaction is likely that you're going to cry at that moment. And then the eulogy comes later. Comes at the funeral. So why is it that first Abraham eulogized and then cried for her? So a few different interesting answers I saw in the Mefarshim. One from Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch is that Abraham wasn't looking to show his pain because he didn't want to make any pomp with it. He didn't want it to look staged, to look fake, to look shticky. He wanted it to be genuine, didn't want to look like it was something any less than genuine. And Rav Hirsch suggested that's why there you don't see this here, but on this sheet, but in Sefer Torah, so the kaf and leaf kota is possible. Maybe that's why it's small, because Abraham tried to publicly downplay so that it wouldn't look hardy the way he was crying for her. And also we know that Sarah meant a lot to Abraham. He must have been in a lot of pain when Abraham lost Sarah. So first he gives the eulogy, but then he experiences his pain privately at home. But it wasn't meant for a public display. Because that's a very interesting insight. The Ksav Kabbalah by Rabbi Yaakov Mecklenburg, also German rabbi. So he points out that normally, of course, the crying comes before the eulogy. And it should have, the Torah should have said, Leif Kota V'lispod Otar, something like that, in that order. But normally, one might cry because of the loss of the living person, right? You can't figure out what to do with that person. And that's why one cries. And the purpose of the hasbet is the purpose of the eulogy is to tell of their praises and to talk about their lives and to make other people feel the loss. But with tzaddikim, the idea that they're totally lost doesn't make sense. It doesn't. It's not really there because ki gedolim b'mitzatam yoter mibechayim, that a tzaddik in some ways is greater in their death than in their life. And sometimes we find out there's a person who might have, you know, lived an extraordinary life, but sometimes, you know, let's say if they published or the stories, whatever, sometimes, you know, the word doesn't really get out until after they passed away. So that's why when it came to Sarah, the hesped comes before the bechi, because the crying wasn't really about her loss, because her legacy was going to remain alive. They were still going to feel Sarah's greatest attributes. You know, were still going to make an impact even after she died. So first the hesped to tell of her greatness, and then only afterwards the bechi, because it's because of, you know, the loss of the greatness, but not because she was going to be totally, you know, lost to the world. Whereas you know, somebody who's maybe more average, so maybe they're going to be forgotten about in due time, and that's where the crying comes from. Okay, another approach is of the Ha'amik Davar of the Nitziv. So he also points out, Derech Olam Tchila Livkot Beino Levein Atzmo. First, you cry privately when you hear the death, V'achar Kach Chaspi Parabim. Then comes the funeral, and then you eulogize. So he gives two reasons why the Torah has in this order. One reason is because it says Ve'avo Avraham Lisbo Sarav Livkota. So Avraham was far away. He was somewhere else, coming back from Akedah maybe. So he was coming back. So in order not to delay anything any further, he gave the hesped first and then saved the crying for later. But he didn't have time to really engage in that personal grief first, because he immediately had to run to the funeral, so to speak. But he said there's also another difference, because sometimes when you lose somebody, so totally changes the rhythm of your life. It totally changes everything about the way you live your life. And that's where you're losing, especially if, you know, if the loss of the you know, that person's sort of being a stable part of your life is more than their actual praises. So that's one thing. And that can happen sometimes, that maybe, you know, maybe you had a relationship with, you know, with a particular person, but it's not that person was a particularly great person. It's just that they were such a staple in your life that what do you do now? How do you adjust to real life afterwards? But with Sarah, that's not really the case. The other possibility is he says, if, you know, but there also could be the case of a tzaddik who, you know, you lose them, but it doesn't necessarily change in your entire life, the entire framework of your life, but it's just they were such a great person, and that's a loss. So, and Tziv says that that's the difference between, you know, the Beis HaMikdash versus Avram losing Tzar. With the Beis HaMikdash, so it really changed everything about the way Jews lived their lives, loss of Korbanos, and just the whole Beis HaMikdash being the center of a focus of the Shekhinah and the way Jews thought of their, you know, Shal Shragalim, everything. So therefore, the, you know, the hesped of the base of the crying of the base of Mikdash comes before the hesped. But when it comes to Avram Avinu crying for Sarah, so they had already, you know, everything they were going to do in life together, they had already done, right? He says that they already raised Yitzchak, so it didn't necessarily change anything major about Avram's life, but it was just her personality was a loss, so therefore it made sense to do the hesped first, where you talk about, you know, her importance, and then the crying comes afterwards. Okay, but there's an emphasis here on that we haven't necessarily seen before, the way Avraham mourns for Sarah, and Hesped, talking about Sarah's greatness as a tzaddik is something that's very centerpiece over here. Now, what are some of the guidelines for giving Hesped? That's what I want to focus on going forward. So the Gemara Gemara quotes a couple of statements, particularly about eulogizing someone who is a chacham. So first, it actually says, "Kol amori demaos al adam kasher." Somebody who sheds tears over an upright person doesn't have to necessarily be a Torah scholar per se, but somebody who is an upstanding Jew. So Kadosh Baruch Hu counts those tears and stores them, meaning to say that he's going to reward you for noting properly the loss of such a person. Okay. Then Rav Yehuda says, in the name of Rav, somebody who is mit atzel behesped oshal chacham, somebody who is lazy in eulogizing a sage, or with a cover b'chayev, such a person should be buried alive, or before his time. It's a very strong statement. When it comes to Torah scholar, you have to eulogize him properly. And likewise, Rabbi Chiya says, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, kol ab mis atzel behesped oshal chacham eno marech yamim mida keneged mida. Such a person doesn't live a long life or doesn't have a longer life, right? It's measure for a measure. So here there's an emphasis particularly on special individuals, Tamid Chachamim, that there needs to be a eulogy. But we'll see that this really applies in general. There's another Gemara in Sanhedrin that asks, Ibayalahu, the question was put out there. What's the purpose of a hesped? This is actually, a very insightful question for what we're trying to accomplish in understanding a hesped. Hespeda yikra dechaye have or yikra deshichve have. Is the purpose of a eulogy for the living? Is it for the dead? Meaning, is the reason why I'm eulogizing, in order to honor the person who deceased because that's the honor to do them? Or is it really more about ourselves and the importance of us eulogizing, but doesn't really make a difference to the person who is deceased? But the Gemara asks, what difference does it make? Why does it matter how one eulogizes? So it gives a couple of possibilities. Number one, let's just say a person says, I don't want eulogies at my funeral. So if the purpose of a eulogy is to honor the deceased, so the deceased doesn't want a eulogy, so you're not. However, if the purpose of the eulogy is for the honor of the living, so the Gemara says, so let's say you have to pay for somebody to deliver the eulogy. Do you force the descendants, do you force the surviving kin to pay for the eulogy? So if the purpose of the eulogy is to honor the living, then it would seem that there's no reason to force them to pay for that. Fine. How do we resolve this issue? So Gemara first gives an example of Avram who eulogized his wife Sarah. So if the purpose and the idea here is that Avraham, again, rushed to eulogize Sarah to make sure that there was no delay. So if the purpose of eulogizing is for the living, right? It's about Avraham. So what difference does it make how quickly Avraham got there and were to eulogize. So therefore, it seems like the eulogizing is for the honor of the dead. Mark gives another example. Says Simon Yafel Amish Nifrei Mimenu Achar Mita. It's a good sign for the deceased when he's punished after his death and doesn't receive an honorable burial. Remesh Elo Nispa Velo Nikbar Oshichaya Gurarto Oshayuk Shavim Mizalchem Mitato. If a wild animal drags him, they're not buried properly, or water, messes up their coffin. So that's a good sign for the deceased, right? So that seems to so therefore, it says Shmamina Yikra Deshichve Hu Shmamina. We learn from this that the eulogy is delivered for the honor of the dead, right? Meaning that if the purpose of the eulogy is for the dead person, then they're not eulogized properly, but that's somehow good for them. So it seems like the eulogy is focused on the honor of the deceased. So that has important, important implications for reasons not mentioned by the Gemara. I'll get to that in a little bit. So first, just to get into some real practical halachic issues. So one way, especially bringing out from this parsha, one way to summarize the requirement to eulogize somebody. So Rabbi David Brodsky writes in his book, Hilchot Avelut, there's a great mitzvah to properly eulogize the deceased, just as Abraham eulogized his wife, Sarah. It doesn't matter, you know, how much tzaddik the person is. You have to properly eulogize them, and we learned this out from Avraham Avinu. Okay, so even though this pasuk just happens to describe how Avraham eulogized Sarah, we seem to extrapolate that that's a requirement for everybody. Now the Torah in the Shulchan Aruch quotes pretty much word for word here. The Torah writes, "Mitzvah gedola lehaspid alameis kara'uri." It's a great mitzvah to eulogize the deceased as appropriate. Somebody who's lazy about that, doesn't do it right, that's bad, etc., as we've said. It's a mitzvah to raise one's voice, to say things that are going to remind people how heartbreaking this is. It's good to say a hesped that's going to bring out the tears, that's going to encourage people to grieve. You want to mention their praises. You're not allowed to exaggerate too much when it comes to the eulogy. So you should mention some of their good traits and add on a little bit to it. Actually, but don't exaggerate too much. Okay, and then he says that if the person doesn't have any good character traits, shouldn't mention them at all. And when it comes to somebody who's pious or somebody who's a sage, so you should mention that appropriately. But somebody who wasn't like that at all, you can't exaggerate, right? If anything, that only makes you look bad and makes the dead person look bad. Okay, so question that comes up. So we said that we're allowed to add on to the praises. You're supposed to praise the person, and you can exaggerate a little bit. So the Taz commentator on the Shulchan Aruch asks the question, "Mali sheker me'ad, mali sheker harbet. What difference does it make if I'm lying a little bit? What difference does it make if I'm lying a lot? Why should it be okay to exaggerate if you're lying? What difference does it make if you're lying a little bit, if you're lying a lot of it?" So, one thing I might say is that first of all, let's just say, person wants to get up and say, my mother called me every week before Shabbos, every single week. So what? So if two times she didn't call, does that mean that you're lying? Basically, we often go by the majority, especially when it's the vast majority. So it's not necessarily entirely exaggerated. In common parlance, we might exaggerate a little bit, but the Taz gives a very insightful answer that even if, let's just say you want to say the person was about stucco. They gave lots and lots of stucco. So at what point are you exaggerating how much stucco they gave? So he points out that if a person was somebody who gave a lot of stucco, so surely they would give more if they had the opportunity to, and we count what they would have done as if they did it. Right. So that's a fair point. It's basically saying that when we're we recognize people's human shortcomings. So if the idea is that the person would have done more if they had the opportunity to, so okay, so we can say that that's who they were, even if they maybe didn't go the full nine yards, not entirely truthful, but we're generous enough to realize that that's at least who they aspired to be, and we can incorporate that into the eulogy. Shulchan Aruch Paskin said somebody who commands them, commands not to have any eulogies, that we should listen to that person. Okay, so that's something. Again, we emphasize that's covered on Mace. Now we can get a little bit to the contents of a eulogy. What am I supposed to do? What am I not supposed to do? So I think this distinction between, eulogizing being for the purpose of the living, for the purpose of the dead, I think becomes very important here. Because if eulogizing is for the purpose of the dead, then the hesped has to be about them. It has to be for their honor, it has to be about them. Which means that whatever you're doing, it can't be about the eulogizer. It can't be about me, it can't be the person I'm speaking. It has to be focused on that person. So a few halachic implications of this. So Shulchan Aruch writes, "Mutar lemar psukim v'drasha l'choramis b'toch arba motav b'veda kfara." So there's a discussion about about not mentioning divrei Torah within 4 amot of the meat. But if you're doing it as part of, you know, kvoda mes, it's part of the funeral, it's part of the eulogy, that's fine. If he says you're allowed to give a drasha, you're allowed to use divrei Torah to frame it, but has to be l'kvoda mes. Okay, so I'll come back to that in a little bit. So the Taz also notes here, the kol she'en l'kvoda mes v'adai aser. So sometimes people think the drasha is the opportunity to showcase everything that I know about Torah, and maybe I'll somehow connect it to the person. So I'll tell you that the RC Emanuel, when it comes to funerals, so it writes the following. This is specifically addressed to rabbis. It is of particular importance to emphasize that the eulogy may not be a long and involved Talmudic discourse. It must be a heartfelt lament of the great loss that is felt by family and friends through conveying a true reflection of the deeds and virtues of the deceased. Okay. Now the Bach comments. Inyan halacha yesha hachmir so we try not to, even outside 4 amos, we try not to say divrei Torah. And then other things are only forbidden within 4 amos. Why would be more strict about words of Torah? Because it's probably, you know, mocking the dead that they can't learn. But udvar shomet mutter, I feel divrei Torah. But if I'm talking about, if I'm sharing words of Torah that relate to the person who died, so I can do it even within 4 amos, 6 feet of the person. It says, "V'chein nagu l'drosh ba'agados v'psukim afilu toch arba amos b'fnei hames v'yotzi me'inyan le'inyan ad sh'magim l'sipor shvachov shal mes me'esek toraso v'chasidu so v'yeser miros tovo shayubo." So the Bach is saying that the common practice was that, you know, people would get up and give a whole drasha, they would give a whole thing, and at some point or another, it would, you know, come back to the person's praises and the Torah they learned and their piety and their good deeds. But that's sort of the key here. So, you know, especially in my role as a rabbi, so, you know, I do, especially, you know, it gives honor to people to, you know, to have words of Torah associated with them and to use words of Torah to bring out the best of people, to bring out insights of their character, is a wonderful thing. So that's good. However, one thing I saw once at a funeral was that, you know, person, this was a, you know, grandchild of the person, and they're giving all different vortlachan, all sorts of things, and I'm thinking to myself, is this really getting to the essence of who the person is, and is this really, you know, the even quoting all those Vortim in the first place, is that really representative of who this person is and how they live their life? They're a wonderful Jew, observant, wonderful person, but, you know, all these different, you know, divrei Torah that were a little bit, you know, kind of, you know, they didn't connect, they didn't flow. It was just, you know, quoting a lot of different things that somehow was meant to, you know, inspire people to do something, but didn't really bring out the honor of the person. So that's a very fine line. That's okay to, and it's good to frame a person's life through words of Torah, but it has to really be on point. It has to be something that's bringing out. You know, it's not about the divrei Torah, but it's about the person. And divrei Torah are serving the person, not the other way around. And when it comes to family, you know, I'd almost say, you know, yeah, it's good. It's good to involve some divrei Torah, but especially when family members are doing it, so really focus on who that person was. I saw in the Gesher HaChaim, which is one of the authoritative svarim on Avelos, mentioned an interesting thing that there are some that there are some communities, including, so you said they quote Chabad, I don't know if this is true or not, Chabad communities, but there's some communities that they don't do Hasbeinim at all. Why is that? Tamar Dabar Kinir Mishum Shabbatkufos Achronos Yishvan Sfinim Yodzi Megidra Hasbein. They talk about things that have nothing to do with the Hesped, or that they exaggerate way too much in a way that's unjustified. Don't do it for the purpose of the eulogy. Has nothing to do. So some have just said, you know what? Maybe it's better not to do a Hesped than to do it wrong. Rabbi Maurice Lim writes in his book, The Jewish Way in Death and Mourning. So he says the following. So following the lesson of Abraham, the purpose of eulogy is twofold. First is hesped, the praising of the deceased for their worthy qualities. Second is bechi, expressing grief, sense of loss by the mourners, the entire Jewish community. Okay, so that's what we get from that. You know, that's what we get from our pasuk. So then he goes on very wisely. The Jewish tradition requires the eulogizing of the deceased to be kara'ui, as we balance inappropriate. It may not grossly exaggerate or invent qualities that the deceased did not in fact possess. Such praise is a mockery and an effrontery to the departed, rather than a tribute to his personal virtues. He then goes on to say, in addition, the mourner should remember that although the deceased may have been undistinguished in many ways and lacking certain moral qualities, there is a substratum of goodness and decency in all men, which can be detected if properly sought. Sometimes the mourners are too close to their departed and see only mediocrity and perhaps meanness. Sometimes a more objective view reveals virtues unknown or latent, honesty or frankness or humaneness or respect or tolerance, or simply the ability to raise decent children in a violent and unstable world. So some sharp words from Rabbi Maurice Lam. But they get to this idea that, you know, not over-exaggerating, not under-exaggerating, but it really has to reflect the person. And that's very important. My father has a story. He was at a funeral once. There was a congregant who passed away with breast cancer. She had a very long battle. This was years and years ago. She had a long battle with breast cancer, and people knew the story. People, you know, even sort of knew when her time was coming. Fine. So he gets to the funeral, and the husband, and they had started a foundation together for it must have been for breast cancer research or something of the like. So they have this foundation, and the husband gets up. He doesn't eulogize his wife, really. The eulogy really consisted of talking about the foundation. I remember my dad criticizing them and saying, like, you know, this is now's not the time to promote. Maybe you incorporate that in as a couple of lines to this is a legacy that she'll carry, and this was something that was important to her. But this is time to talk about, you know, who this person was. What were their greatest qualities. And I'll close sort of, you know, getting back to this point that, you know, that especially when it comes to, you know, to Divrei Torah, it's very important that we take great pains to describe a person properly. So Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein wrote about this in an article called Tenuous Orthodoxy, Spiritual Accounting. So you talked about sort of the part of the centrist or modern Orthodox community that's, you know, engaged in worldliness versus more right-wing communities that perhaps are a little more removed from the world, place less of an emphasis on a worldly education. So Varon writes that, you know, I can emphatically state that my general education has contributed much to my personal development. It's helped them understand Tanakh, gives them insight about life and life in Eretz Yisrael, it enhances religious experience. Fine. So he writes, many of these elements are sadly lacking along the culture of the right. And then he says, psychological sensitivity in those circles is grossly deficient. Just recall, if you attended the funeral of a great rabbi, how shrek, repetitive, and inane the eulogies were. Or when Aaron Cutler passed away, there was what was considered at that time a huge funeral downtown. And there was a long row of eulogizers, Rosh Yeshiva and rabbis, but the only person who began to give an insight into the fire which animated the giant was Irving Bunim, a layperson. Okay, so, in other words, a eulogy is not supposed to be generic and it's not supposed to be that person, you know, was kind and they're observant and whatever, but really get into the unique qualities of purpose. That's how you give honor to the deceased. And I remember seeing this in a funeral for an individual in my wife's family. So this was a person who suffered a lot in life, and he was committed to learning and to davening a lot. There were a whole bunch of rabbis who got up and they spoke, you know, each for 10 minutes each or whatever, and talked about, you know, how, you know, he always learned and he persisted in avodas Hashem even though it was difficult. And at a certain point, he just got, you know, it felt generic and ununique. And then the children get up and they really were able, I don't remember what they said, but I just remember feeling okay, now I'm really getting an insight into who this person, you know, was and what their personality was. So nowadays, as it is fairly common for people to, eulogize family members, create that space. I think it's good for people to be aware of, you know, what constitutes a proper husband, that it should really focus on the person, should bring out the finer qualities, unlike, you know, what I said at the beginning joke. So obviously we don't have anything nice to say, definitely don't say it in the eulogy. And Rabbi Maurice Lam is right that for the vast majority of people, there's usually some good qualities that you can say about a person. So you want to bring out the good qualities. And it's okay, you know, to, you know, maybe exaggerate a little bit, but it should all be a proper measure and should really bring out who the personality was. It's not about me, the eulogizer, and my relationship with the person. And it's not about my knowledge of Torah, but it's about the person who